And welcome to The Midday with Vicki and Norman.
And we have a guest today who does fingerstyle gymnastics.
Gymnastics, that's a funny way to put it. I'm thinking I better stretch these little puppies out here.
This is Richard Gilowitz, a guitarist hailing from Florida in Madison for a couple of events tonight and tomorrow night. And we're hoping to learn a little bit about the guitar from you.
I'll see what I can explain. It's kind of like, let's talk about the universe. I mean, there's so much there, and it's like an iceberg. You know, if you look at an iceberg and you realize what's underneath the water, there's so much more there. And I was thinking about, well, I'm going on a classical station predominantly, so that's like saying, let's talk about, you know, the world or the universe, because it's so vast. So you just have to kind of pick and choose. But I'll see if I can come up with something maybe your listeners haven't heard yet.
Well, all right. We're rooting for you.
Me too.
One reason that it gets complicated is because you play so many different styles. You're certainly not strictly a classical guitarist, but you're not strictly a 12-string guitarist or a 6-string guitarist either.
No, it's kind of, I mean, I feel guilty. Like, you can sit down too, pull your chair up, let's just make ourselves at home. But I feel like if you go on a long trip in the car, you don't just take one style of music with you. You might bring reggae, blues, classical, folk, a little bit of everything. And so that's just honestly how I've always felt about music in general, is I'm a pretty selfish player, and I think a lot of people need to be, because otherwise you'll just be puppeteered by everybody. Oh, you should do this, you should do that. But I think if you learn to follow your own path, and people say to me sometimes, what's your favorite tune? And it's like, well, at one point, every single tune I play was a favorite tune. That's why I took the time to learn it. It's like my life, my investment. So,
what style did you start out playing as a guitarist?
Well, I guess it's embarrassing to admit, but my first inspirations was cutting out the back of cereal boxes, listening to Sugar Sugar by the Archies.
Yeah,
from
that
there,
sounds pretty embarrassing.
Went to the Beatles, and then finally, I think it was actually Foggy Mountain Breakdown,
well,
the banjo picking styles that I heard in the movie Bonnie and Clyde, and then Arlo Guthrie's Alice's Restaurant, and then my guitar teacher, who was a classical teacher, introduced me to the music of Andre Segovia, and he was telling me about one of his 6-year-old students that thought Segovia was a salad dressing. So what that told me was that my teacher had a sense of humor, because he didn't kill the kid.
Yeah, well, Segovia certainly covered a lot of territory, too, as a guitarist.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Many different styles.
And Barrios, I've learned a little bit more about him as I'm putting this book together. And so I think classical guitar, steel string guitar, John Fahey, Leo Kottke, they termed that style. I think John called it American primitive because it's unschooled and it's blues-based. But believe it or not, opera and bluegrass was part of their inspiration, too.
Well, when you say unschooled, though, that doesn't mean without technique and precision.
To a degree, almost instinctive technique versus maybe, say, the classical approach with the right-hand fingers, the PIMA and hand position and putting your left foot this way and how you breathe and posture. Not so much that it's undisciplined, I mean, but to a degree, there is some. That's what I try and pull from both worlds when I play. One is very technical and very schooled, but then the other one is more seat-of-the-pants kind of a.
Could you give us an example, I mean, even a short one, of two contrasting styles of the same piece?
Yeah, sure. Well, for example, I'll play a little thing like there was one Leo Kottke wrote called Airproofing that I think actually inspired, say, Eric Clapton to do Lay Down Sally. And so this is a little piece of that. And then I'll go from that into, say, a Fernando Soar fragment. That's Airproofing, and then Fernando Soar would be. That kind of an approach. So with the right hand, there's almost a different, I guess they call it a different attack, and it has to do with whether you bow the strings. In classical guitar, There's a technique called rest stroke versus free stroke. And with free stroke, you play a string and then you release your finger into the air. But with rest stroke, you stop on the string above it. Where if I play string two, I'm finishing up my finger by resting it on three. And so you get more power that way. But I've developed a technique of playing a bowing technique where, because on a steel string guitar versus a nylon string, you have a little bit more string resistance. So I don't want to do a rest stroke on there, so I'll do a free stroke technique. But the way you generate more power is to think of a bow and arrow. So if you pull a bow back and you're going to shoot that arrow, depending on how far you pull the bow back, that's how far that note or that bow shoots, right? So it's the same thing. I use this bowing technique. So, for example, if I was, say, playing an E chord and I played four notes, just my string six, then two, then four, then three, like this. You can see that the sound is equal for each note, but you can generate individual note power by targeting one over the others and making them, accentuating those more so you get more of a 3D effect in your playing. So instead of what you just heard, I'll accent a different one and you'll hear that. Like that. And so if you practice that with a metronome, it makes for an interesting, it makes for a more lively performance. So I think on a steel string, you can generate this rest stroke effect, but with a free stroke technique, and you need to use the metronome to keep your timing on. Otherwise, you'll have rhythm like Steve Martin on the front porch of that movie, The Jerk, if anybody remembers that.
Now, if I were to bring up a question about steel string versus nylon strings.
Right.
Would that open a can of worms?
Oh, no, not at all. In fact, there's different string. As far as steel string, you have, you've got phosphor bronze and golden bronze and bright bronze, and you have silken steel strings. So you have all these different textures, I guess you might call them. And then with nylon string, they go with tensions. So you have, let's say, low or normal tension or high tension. So it's just a different tone, I guess, that you get. And then with the right hand, say, when you play down by the bridge of the guitar to the right of the sound hole, you get more of a pizzicato effect, like there. But then if you move your hand to the left of the sound hole up towards the neck, you get a little bit softer tone. So you can, by keeping your pinky off the guitar, a lot of people play with their right pinky on the guitar, and I keep it off the guitar, and I have my pinky shadow my ring finger because there's a tendon in the back of your hand that locks them together. So that's one way of developing speed, is by not locking your hand up, because there's all these speed bumps and you're available to you, like your breathing, your posture, being insecure about your playing, intimidated, ego. All that stuff is like a part of an obstacle course. So when you learn to eliminate those, it makes a difference. And as far as the strings, you have to play to the strings. Like with steel string, you have light gauge, medium gauge, heavy gauge. Then on top of that, you have your action, which is how high the strings are off the fingerboard. And I think if I was going to give one message to people, I mean, I can't think of anything more important to say than this, but most guitars, I think, 80% and up, the action is too high.
Have to work to get those strings down.
Exactly. And so as a result, a lot of people start playing and pressing down, and it hurts their fingers. And then they say, this is not for me. I guess I'm not meant to be a guitar player. And they don't give themselves a fighting chance. And just guitars get shipped that way, And the bridge saddle, which is that little white piece of bone that comes in the bridge there, they can sand that down. There's a truss rod that goes down the center of the neck, and they can tweak that and lower the action. They can go into the nut, which is up by the headstock, and go into the grooves. So there's multiple ways to bring the action down. You can also put a capo on, say, the second fret like I have here, and that lowers the action and also shortens the fret span. So I think if people are beginning, they might want to think about getting the guitar playable, regardless of the brand or the price. And because otherwise it's like going into a gym and saying, well, geez, I can't bench press 400 pounds. I guess weightlifting's not for me. So. So you got to give yourself a fighting chance. So that's my answer on strings. You can see why I called one of my CDs Synapse Collapse, by the way. I go, whew.
Well, what else would you like to play for us?
Well, I was talking about doing a... I could do a study by my guitar teacher. He originally called it study for Margot, but then they got divorced, so now he wants me to just call it study. But this is a little study he wrote. It's just in standard tuning. And what's interesting about this is Dave put... His name's David Walbert. And I think I was talking to you on the phone, and he's actually one of the three inventors of the board game Trivial Pursuit, but that's another one of my
that's
asides.
That's a Trivial Pursuit question in itself.
It sort of is, yeah, yeah. But Dave has an interesting way of playing. He plays nylon string and has fingernails like Godzilla's toenails. And there's a whole school of thought behind that, too. Some people play with nails and some play with just flesh. I used to use metal finger picks on the steel
right,
strings.
Yes, a lot of people do, I guess.
Yeah, somebody called them my Freddy Krueger starter set, so I got rid of those. But Dave has an interesting way of writing, and for example, here he did a thing where he put the melody in the bass. So that's the melody, and after each one of those notes, he throws in strings two and one, so you wind up with this piece. Drifts off. So
that sounded like you were maybe getting some harmonic effects in there.
Right, the harmonics I threw in there. That's when you barely touch the string over the fret and then you release it. I try and teach that by telling people, pretend you're touching a hot stove, and the instant it becomes hot, you would immediately release your finger. So as soon as you strike it with your right hand, that's igniting it, so to speak, and so that's exactly when you want to release it. If you release it too soon, you just get a note. If you keep it on too long, you get kind of a thud. And if you do it that way, you get a chime. So that's one of the techniques. There's a lot of different ways. But anyway, so harmonics are a whole interesting world. I was going to do something on the 12 string for you in a minute.
Good.
Talk about the harmonics there. And
did you get it all tuned? I mean, it only takes an hour or so to get it.
Yeah, in theory, yeah.
Now, I noticed, is there a tuning device right there on your guitar?
Yeah, this is a little IntelliTouch tuner, and I like this one because it has a little sort of window in there with the letters on it. And I remember I played a clinic before. It was, I think, in New Jersey, and a guy asked me if this was a mirror. So,
have you ever used a fluorescent light or
a phone
to tune
dial
to?
Tone?
No, I've used a crying baby once. That was a B flat. But no, I'm not one of those people that can play by ear. You know, where I just hear something and I go, oh, that's a B. I mean, I have no idea.
The perfect pitch.
Yeah,
the tuners are wonderful devices. Well, I'm anxious to hear that 12-string guitar. And
so the 12-string, how are the strings paired?
The way they have it is strings 1 and 2. Actually, I guess you have a pair at 1 and a pair at 2, and those are unisons. And then for 3, 4, 5, and 6, you have a little tiny octave string above it. So, for example, if this is string 3, That's the little octave above it. So a lot of people ask me when I'm finger picking, do I target those? And I sort of do, because what's interesting is if you're coming with your thumb on the downbeat on the third string, but you get such a high sounding note, it creates an illusion to the listener that they're hearing, you know, a high string, which they anticipate may be on the upbeat. So you can get actually a syncopated effect without playing syncopation style. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's not something I would have expected.
Yeah, and then with the 12th string, I think the nature of this instrument, I've got it pitched down two whole steps from standard, which I think makes it like an L or something. But it's then right now it's in an open G tuning, and we were talking.
Sounds like slack key to me.
That's exactly what that is, actually. Slack key is. We were talking about that on the phone, and I'm doing this research for a book I'm going to put out called Nylon to Steel, where it's kind of a fusion of the technique and repertoire of the classical guitarist and steel string guitarist. So I'm researching the blues players like, you know, Robert Johnson and Blind Lemon Jefferson, and then you've got Segovia and Barrios and Carcassi and Fernando Soro, all these players, and Sebastian Bach. It's really interesting to find out what's happening here, but I guess the Mexicans came to Hawaii to teach them how to do cowboy stuff, for lack of a better term. I'll just call it cowboy stuff because I don't know about cowboy stuff because I'm from New Jersey. They left their guitars behind, and so the Hawaiians would play with it, but they knew that strings were not very accessible, so they would pitch them down real low, and that's where the term Hawaiian slack key came from. And I found that interesting, that I thought it was just open G tuning, which had some inspiration in Delta blues and slide guitar. But with open G, I found out that was only one of about 40 tunings, which astounded me. Mm. And then each of the tunings was almost indigenous to particular families. So if a person was playing guitar and they saw somebody coming over to their group and they were not from their family, they would stop playing, so they kept it a secret. So supposedly, very territorial. So they would. It's interesting that the style didn't die out and it survived. There's Keola Beamer, I think, and Len somebody, but I forget his last name. I don't want to. Caracop or something like that, but
perpetuated the style.
They've kept it alive and they've sustained it. And what's interesting, I was going to play a little piece, being on the classical portion of your show here. This is a. Hey Zoo, Joy of Man's Desiring, and Leo Kottke did this arrangement back in the early 70s. So with a 12-string guitar pitched down two whole steps in open slack key Hawaiian tuning, I'll play Hey Zoo by Bach for you. Thank you.
That was really beautiful. Thank you.
And different at the same time. A little bit of almost sounded like what you get with a slide guitar.
Yeah.
In fact, that I'm not even sure what you call it. It's not vibrato, but it's that kind of...
Well, the vibrato is an interesting thing. That's one thing I'm trying to point out to a lot of steel string players is the effective use of vibrato and silence and letting the tune breathe. Because sometimes too many steel string players, I almost get this impression that they're going for speed, like they think guitar playing is an Olympic sport, and it's like watching rocks skip across the surface of the water, and I want to see the dolphin going in and out unpredictably. You know, I want some music, and classical music offers that. You know, that's why it's so timeless, like we were talking before, where it stands the test of time. You know, it's going to be around, and that's because of, I think, all of the elements available in that soup, you know, the restraint, the silence, the beauty, the purity of it. And I remember, I forgot which one of my multiple inspirations I was talking to, but it might have been my teacher, David Walbert, but I was told that ideally, even though it's an extension of you as a player through your instrument, whatever your instrument is, ideally you want to have the music be what's sitting in the room, and you as a player eventually can maybe become a witness to it like everybody else. So that's kind of the goal I shoot for is when I'm playing right, I kind of disappear, so... Anything about a problem I have or an insecurity or cold fingers in a studio, you know, don't come into play.
But, yeah, they are kind of cold today, aren't they? It's
one yeah, of, one plus of those I was carrying those 26-pound cases across the street.
Now, I can't help but notice how beautiful these guitars are. Is there one particular luthier or guitar maker that you work with?
Actually, there's a company out of Oregon called Breedlove Guitars, and that's a signature model six-string that they built for me. And then this is a 12-string with, I'll hold the wood up to the mic so your listeners can see it. But it's myrtle wood in the back. And there's different kinds of woods like mahogany and rosewood and sitka and cedar and spruce. I always tell people this is monogamy. It gets their attention. But it's a beautiful guitar, and they've been very kind to me. So, yeah, the Breedlove guitars are extraordinary. So,
lots of inlay and lots of detail work that as you look at the instrument, you just really appreciate.
Oh, yeah, they just built a guitar for this NAMM music trade show. I think a Japanese buyer just stepped up to the plate. It was like a $50,000 to $75,000 guitar, and it was called the Exodus, and they had these full page ads in guitar magazines for the past year showing the stages of its construction.
Now, one thing that you see often in guitars, including your 12 string that you have there, is that distinctive cutout. You know, it almost looks like that's where your other knee would go.
But, yeah, well, that's a cutaway.
What's the acoustic principle behind that?
Well, what's interesting, that's called a cutaway, and there's different kinds. Sometimes they're pointy, and they have, like, Florentine cutaways and soft cutaways. It's so that there's room for me to get up there if I'm playing, say, slide or want to get up into that register. The guitar body's not blocking it. And, yeah, you might lose a little bit of body projection from that, but... You know, that's where the designers come in with the way they brace the tops and how they choose their woods and how thin the tops are. And so that's, I think, one unique thing about the Breedlove guitars is they have – it's interesting. There was a luthier from New Mexico who used this little device. I think he called the Bridge Doctor. And it held the top of the guitar, you know, up so that it wouldn't collapse in while he was working. And it sat under the bridge, and Breedlove's the only company using it in their design, but it keeps it from caving in over time. And also with that device, it allows for a thinner top, so the tops can
vibrate
a little bit more, so you have more projection. So it's interesting. I think that's going to be the way some of these companies go someday. So, but the cutaway, it facilitates my left-hand movement, so I'm happy it's there. I've always had one, so...
And there's something else I don't think I've noticed on other guitars, and that is a bar across the
pickup. This is called a pickup. There's different ways of amplifying a guitar. Like classical players tend to just use the room acoustics and their technique, or maybe a mic at a distance, like a condenser mic. With the steel string, I like to project a little bit more, and you get a certain type of sound. And there's pickups that go under the bridge in the saddle, and those are called piezos. It's P-I-E-Z-O. That works off the body vibration, but then a magnetic pickup is what goes in the sound hole, And that's what this is. It's an LR Bags magnetic pickup that I plug into a box, and that goes to the sound system. But then I use a microphone in front additionally in a separate channel to get the ambience of the guitar, too. So it gets a nice sound.
And
so.
You play without picks, I gather.
Yeah, I used to use the picks, and now I use very, very short nails. And depending on either the tune or the point of the tune, I'll bow my hand out and target that little bit of nail, or else I'll use that fleshy attack. It depends on, you know, which tune I'm playing and what kind of a tone I'm after.
Well, what should we hear before we go into the quiz question?
I could do something interesting I'll bet you've never seen before. I'll put this guitar, it's in open G now, and if I make this second note, this B, a B flat, I'll do that tapping thing I showed you. And so your listeners might be intrigued by this. Maybe they can hear me play it in town over the next couple days. But what I did is I threw the guitar in an open G minor tuning, and then I played an E major chord, which didn't sound very good. It sounded like a train wreck. So I moved it up a fret. So total trial and error. And just based on that one move, I created this whole little melody here. So.
Fascinating. Percussion included.
Yeah, well, Richard, yeah, you can come over anytime.
Ah, thank you very much. It's like a tapping technique somebody showed me. So
yeah, it's a little hard for us to describe it. It's one of those places where we wish we had our, you know, webcam there to show exactly how you were doing that. But there was a lot of action and precision required in the right hand to attack those strings.
Yeah, you're tapping the harmonics and you're targeting a particular melody, but then you have all these other extraneous sounds coming into play, which actually work for the tune. And what's beautiful about that approach, I think, is that it's never quite the same. It's almost impossible to get it identical. You can go for the melody, but those other little things that happen will be different each time.
See that, a lot of variables.
Yeah, so you just kind of sit back and see how it comes out each time. So it's kind of fun. But when I play it live, the microphone really picks that up. And then with the pickup that you were asking about in the sound hole, I turn on a delay pedal, so it ricochets the effect. So if I hit it once, it'll repeat it. So I go bap, and it goes bap. So you get a ticka-ticka-ticka-ticka kind of effect. It's nice layered sound. So,
well, for people in the Madison area, you can go and hear and watch Richard Gilowitz play a concert tomorrow night at the Monroe Street Fine Arts Center. That's 2526 Monroe Street in Madison. Concert's at 8 o'clock. And tonight at Ward Brot Music Mall on the Beltline in Madison, there is a workshop at 6:30 for beginners. Or what's the workshop topic?
Well, it's kind of a, think of it maybe like going to Disney World and they show you what's going on behind the scenes, because it's going to be sort of a concert the first half. You know, I'll play about 30, 40 minutes of just music so people can see what I'm doing. Then we do a Q&A and let people ask questions about how I do what I do. Slide guitar, the tapping, the technique. I show them how to play all this. It takes about 5 minutes, but I'll stretch it out by giving out prizes to everybody who comes. All my sponsors have been very kind and given us bunches of swag. So if you show up, you learn and get a prize.
Well, thank you for showing up here, Richard Gilowitz, and good luck on your next tour. And you're heading off to Indiana, right?
Yeah, Indiana. It was. It's weird, you know. One minute I'm in New Zealand, then I'm in Wyoming, then I'm playing in Kansas, and now I'm here. So it's something that's been going on for 25 years, and I don't plan on stopping. But it's fun. You never know what kind of questions you're going to get from people. Can I tell you my favorite?
All right.
A little first grader in Arkansas, I played a tune and I said, any questions? And he raised his hand and said, are most of the people who like the music you play dead?
Well, the answer would be what? I don't know.
I don't know. You just never know what's going to come out of people's mouths. First graders are the best, though.
Well, thanks for sharing some of that music. We'll have the quiz question. That'll be the next stop. We'll also, though, right after that, hear a couple of pieces from Richard Gilowitz's CD, Thumb Sing, which will include Fantasia. Let's see. That's
Alonso de Mudara.
Oh, Mudara.
In the 1500s, he wrote Tre Liobros. You guys can say those words better than me.
Three books.
Yeah, but it's actually a lute piece, and what's interesting is the lute, I think, had the third string as an F sharp, and the guitar has it as a G. But then I put a capo on the fourth fret when I recorded that, and moved it not from the lute to the classical, but to the steel string to create kind of a harp like effect.
So we'll hear that, and then we'll go ahead and segue from that to the prelude for lute, which is...
That's Johann Sebastian Bach, and it's also called Prelude in D minor. My theory is they named all the hard stuff twice.